You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Domestic or intimate partner violence is a complex and silent epidemic that affects millions of people worldwide. To respond to the overwhelming issues associated with domestic violence, Randy's House of Angels has produced a series of podcasts that will bring this epidemic to the forefront of public consciousness and break the silence that often shrouds it. This is Paul Miller, producer of this program, and by creating a dedicated platform, Randy's House of Angels hopes to create a safe space for survivors, advocates, and experts to share their stories, insights, and knowledge. A series of topics will be discussed that can offer vital support and resources to victims and survivors, helping them realize that they are not alone and that there is help available. It can also serve as a catalyst for raising awareness and fostering necessary conversations within families, communities, and institutions to empower individuals, foster empathy, and inspire collective action toward eradicating domestic violence while creating a safer, more compassionate society. We invite you to access the podcast by going to randyshouseofangels.org. Today, we will be exploring how the intersection of intimate partner violence and homelessness creates unique challenges and vulnerabilities, and what are the contributing factors that create economic instability, lack of support, and systemic issues. We will also examine the barriers survivors face in seeking help, including access to shelters, legal resources, and supportive services in our communities. Joining us today is Rhonda Hendrickson. Ms. Hendrickson is a graduate of Public Affairs at Penn State University and Elizabethtown College's School of Continuing and Professional Studies. She is currently the Chief Operating Officer at the YWCA Greater Harrisburg and is an adjunct instructor at Penn State Harrisburg teaching Homeland Security. With more than 24 years of expertise in public health issues, Rhonda provides program management expertise in issues related to domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and organizational leadership. She has served leadership roles at the YWCA of Greater Harrisburg, supporting violence intervention and prevention services. Ms. Hendrickson speaks at the local, state, and national level on issues related to domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. Today's podcast facilitator is Sherry Peters. Sherry Peters, a master's level social worker, is a nationally recognized facilitator in the children's mental health field and currently serves on the board of Randy's House of Angels. Formerly the director of the Psychiatric Residential Treatment Facility Waiver Initiative at Georgetown University's National Technical Assistance Center for Children's Mental Health, Ms. Peters also spent 21 years in leadership positions in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's Office of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, addressing children's mental health policy and program development. This includes suicide prevention and trauma-related issues. In her early career, she spent a decade as a therapist in residential and community settings.
Welcome, Rhonda. It's so nice to have you with us today, and we're going to be talking about the connection between homelessness and intimate partner violence or domestic violence. So, how do those two connect, Rhonda? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they certainly are interwoven. You know, at the YWCA, we have a department that focuses on domestic violence and sexual assault, but we also serve women and children who are experiencing homelessness. And what we know is that about 95% of those women screen in for having histories of trauma that are related to domestic violence. So those linkages become very clear. And certainly homelessness can become a consequence of, you know, fleeing that domestic violence situation and trying to find safety.
So because they're so connected and interwoven, what are some of the things that you think people out there in the general public need to know about this whole connection? What is it that's important for folks to understand?
Well, we have to understand the dynamics of domestic violence from the beginning. You know, what does that look like? But we also have to understand that Because the issue of homelessness, especially in women, is so closely related to domestic violence. But it also makes individuals much more susceptible, if they are homeless, to things like sexual violence, human trafficking. So we want to be able to look at a client that comes in for services and really screen and provide services in a holistic way. That we're not just treating one aspect, you're homeless, you need stable housing. But we also want to be able to treat all the trauma that has come with that, that may be making that situation even worse and more unstable, even dangerous for that client we're serving.
So that's really important, that thinking about the vulnerability when folks are in that kind of a situation. So what are some of the resources that are able to be provided to women and children who find themselves in that kind of position?
Well, there are lots of services that are available out there. So we have to identify, what is it that this client would like to accomplish? We want them to be the driver of those services. Are they looking for counseling services? Are they looking for, professional therapy, safe shelter? Maybe next step or long-term housing, a crisis intervention services. It really depends on, what the client is looking for and what that goal plan is going to look like. And we want to develop that uniquely with each client. But certainly, at agencies like the YWCA, we offer 24-hour crisis lines for victims, but we also have just a myriad of housing programs that can help keep people safe and move them forward.
The housing programs that you talk about, is it difficult to have availability for those who actually need those housing programs? Do you have waiting lists? Like what's the situation?
Yeah, unfortunately, the waiting lists are long. To get into, let's start with like a domestic violence shelter, beds are full. The capacity that we have to meet the demand is not even, demand far outweighs our capacity to respond most days. I was just looking at some of our end of shift reports from last night. We had 5 or 6 individuals seeking safe shelter. We have no beds. We assist by calling other shelters to try to find placement, and they're all experiencing the same thing. And then throw on top of that individuals who are homeless who may not have identified as domestic violence victims, mainly because they just haven't said those words, are also trying to seek space in homeless shelters who experience the same issues. The demand just outweighs the capacity. So that is something that, there's no easy solution for that. There needs to be more housing. There needs to be more funding.
So I'm curious to know about how children figure into this. If someone comes and says they are a victim of domestic violence and they have children in tow, does that make a difference if they don't say they've been a victim of domestic violence?
Well, it doesn't make a difference as far as getting access, right? So if a survivor identifies that they're fleeing, they need safe shelter, they're prioritized for those open beds. I think when there are children involved, we want to be sure that we are also serving the child, because the child is suffering from the same trauma. They've witnessed abuse. Or if, the family is just homeless, then they have the trauma of that homelessness, as well as being displaced from the community, displaced from possibly the only home they've ever known. And now they're living in a communal environment with strangers. So we want to make sure that we're addressing and identifying the trauma in the child as well. In fact, we just received a small grant to really start working very deliberatively on child trauma in our clients that come in for services.
So what are some of the things that you might be able to help children with that are experiencing, obviously, this past trauma and present trauma just by being displaced? What can you do?
Sure. So what we want to do first and foremost is identify what they're experiencing. So whether that's sort of a child trauma screening, identifying, you know, where they are in that screening, but then getting them the type of services that they may need. So, for example, if they've witnessed violence in the home, we want to get them started in some child-specific counseling, potentially even, you know, link them up with our therapists. We want to hold support groups for kids so that they have peer support and realize that there are other children who are experiencing the things that they have. But we also want to be able to give them recreational and socialization skills and activities so that they can join in and feel a part of maybe a new community while they transition from one living environment to another.
In your experience, how do some of the children and women who come to you experience success in this whole process? Can you give some examples of some success stories that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, whether it's a case of homelessness, whether if it's domestic violence, I think there sometimes is a cycle that's involved in that. And, you know, the survivor, the client, they have to be ready to, you know, really plan for what comes next and take those steps. And that's scary, especially when you have trauma that hasn't been treated and holds you in place. So it is possible. We have case managers that work with our clients on a weekly basis or more often as needed. But we see clients who really work towards self-sufficiency by identifying what they need to do. I need to get a job. I need to learn some skills around taking care of my own finances. I need, of course, the big one, housing. Where am I going after I've been in a shelter program? And it definitely is possible, and we certainly see a lot of success stories. And we also see a lot of individuals who really struggle and go through that cycle of, you know, in and out of services until they're really ready to move forward. Because no matter what we wish for them, you know, it's got to be them who has that motivation and has healed enough to move forward.
Yeah, the whole idea of the person having choice is so important. And I wonder for our listeners, if someone who is listening is experiencing domestic violence or intimate partner violence, and they are afraid because they know that they have no place to go, what would be their first step in trying to figure out what to do?
Yeah, we certainly advocate for them to call into a domestic violence hotline. So those hotlines, and there's a program in every county, are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So Christmas Day, when families are celebrating, we have advocates on duty ready to help. And they will help that person walk through what is happening in their life and start looking at a safety plan. What is going to be safe for you? What are you ready to do? Are you ready to leave? And if not, how can we keep you safe while you're still living with, you know, the perpetrator? How do we plan for that exit in the safest possible way? Because we do know that one of the most dangerous times for a victim is when they are attempting to leave and that perpetrator is losing control. And it's a scary time. You know, often a survivor knows what's happening at home. They've become adjusted to knowing the signs of when this blow up is going to happen, when abuse is coming. They can see it, they can feel it. They know that. But what they don't know is, how do I survive after that? If I leave, what is going to happen to me? What is going to happen to my children? So that's a very scary time, and working with an advocate to make that safety plan, I think, is a very crucial first step.
So the first step really is making a phone call. And even that is probably pretty scary for some folks.
It's very scary, can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, if you know somebody who you believe is not safe, you can ask them, are you safe at home? Would you like a phone? I know a phone number we can call and get some advice. Help that friend call into a hotline.
So you make a good point about it not necessarily being safe to call, especially from their own phone, that the perpetrator may have access to and realize that they made that call. So how might they think about safely making a call? Are there some options?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, do you have a neighbor who you know well enough or not to go ask, may I just use the phone? But also think of all the places that we go as a routine, a doctor's office, a dentist's office, our beauty shop. Use the phone, ask to use the phone. But importantly, we also train those types of professionals to recognize and discuss domestic violence and know that hotline number so that they can sort of step in and make that intervention safely and maybe be that lifeline that a survivor needs, that first step.
Really important.
Did you know that Randy's House of Angels has served over 275 children since 2012? Go to randyshouseofangels.org to learn more about programs offered to children who are victims and or exposed to domestic violence. Programs are offered at no cost to parents and guardians in six central Pennsylvania counties, including Cumberland, Perry, York, Dauphin, Lebanon, and Adams. Contact Nancy Chavez at 717-503-4498 or email randyshouseofangels@gmail.com for more information.
I know that a lot of the professionals have in the past couple of decades begun to ask the right questions, especially in doctor's offices, for instance. So that's important information for folks to know. What else is there about homelessness and the vulnerability that you talked about earlier of those who find themselves in that kind of situation? What are some of the things that they can think about in terms of how to get themselves into a more safe kind of situation?
Yeah, so you really have to know how to access systems. And, you know, how many people out there really know how to do that until you need it? And then, you know, you're experiencing trauma, you're experiencing violence, you're experiencing homelessness, and you're not really thinking, how do I find all these resources? So we want to make sure that we're out there as an agency in the community, making sure people know the hotline numbers, making sure they know the resources. And that's really part of a community, is making sure everybody understands how to help each other. You know, it really is a village. You know, that old saying is so true. It does take a village. We all have to sort of step in and take responsibility for violence in our communities, for the homeless who are sleeping on our streets. You know, I think our point in time survey had about 400 people. I think the last data I know is about 2022. I'm sure there's more current right now, but about 400, you know, homeless individuals in Dauphin County, where the YWCA is. You know, do they know how to get resources? And we certainly have wonderful partner agencies who go out there and do that outreach and connect with those individuals. Well, I think we have to understand that whether it's domestic violence, homelessness, or a combination of those things, this can happen to anyone. Domestic violence, homelessness, you know, it doesn't discriminate. Doesn't matter, you know, what your race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status is. One bad relationship, one illness in your family can put you on the road to needing safe shelter. And finding that is, again, a matter of knowing what's in your community, but your community also knowing what's there and how to refer people in for services.
I listened to a couple of radio shows in recent weeks who talked about this whole idea of homelessness not necessarily being the way we should refer to homelessness anymore. It's the unhoused or other language that we need to be using. Can you talk a little bit about what is the state of the language that we use at this point?
Well, you know, certainly in our programs, our departments are referred to as, you know, housing and homelessness, you know, terms of housing insecurities, and then there's lots of terms that fly around. The bottom line is, somebody needs assistance.
Sure.
And we want to make sure that the resources are there. We want to make sure that the resources can meet the demand, which we know at this time, you know, most counties aren't able to do. So however we phrase it, we want to try to address not just the root causes of what's going on, but do we have the resources to meet the demand?
So what are some of the common scenarios? You mentioned that anybody could become homeless, anybody could be in this situation. What are some of the common scenarios?
Right. So at the YWCA, of course, what we're seeing most of all is that domestic violence, human trafficking that cause people to flee and seek safety elsewhere. And then those folks become literally homeless by the very definition of the statute. And seek, you know, next step housing. And as I said before, about 95% of the individuals in our homeless programs have that history of domestic violence and sexual assault. So we see that as the most prevalent thing. But there's also other scenarios we see. Individuals, especially single women in some of our programs, who might be on disability and just don't have the resources to find safe, affordable housing. And so they're looking for programs. They might end up on the street for a while and come into like a transitional program. And then we have a project-based Section 8 program inside our building. So a single woman would be able to transition into that when there's openings. Now, there's 20 rooms of that. So again, we go back to that whole demand and capacity problem. You know, it's very unique to individuals as to what their problem is. People who have experienced job losses, you know, COVID-19 certainly derailed the entire world. Some people haven't recovered financially, jobs, but also with their own mental health. We see a lot of untreated mental health in our programs.
And that's an important point that you just made about the pandemic. In your experience, have there been a lot more folks coming to you for help since the pandemic?
Yes, there's definitely a lot more homelessness. There's a lot more untreated trauma out there that may be a combination of trauma symptoms, but also the untreated or unmedicated mental health. I mean, a lot of our clients who are either homeless or fleeing don't have their meds. And so they need to be connected with those medical and mental health experts. And we do. We have a visiting physician program that comes to our building every other week with a physician and a nurse who will see our clients and help them get connected, you know, manage those medications, but also trying to manage their general health and making sure that they are, you know, able to take care of themselves and looking after those needs. Because frankly, when you're on the street, when you don't know where you're going to, you know, your next meal is coming from or how you're going to care for your children, you know, getting a dental exam or a preventative care exam is not on the top of the priority list. But it's important for long-term health outcomes.
That's a really important point about the medical and dental care. And I'm assuming, but I want to check it out with you, that the children who come in with their moms are also seen by the physician or dentist, and those, it's not just for their moms. Is that correct?
Correct. The visiting physician will see the entire family unit that is in our program, yes.
Okay. And getting back to the children, what's the average length of stay for children who come in with their moms?
Dependent on program. Our homeless program is usually about 28 days. Not a lot of time to figure out what your next step is, find employment, find housing. Our domestic violence shelter doesn't have a time limit. There's no maximum and minimum times. We do say we offer at least 30 days stay. And then we, you know, extend that based on the needs of that client. You know, certainly if somebody's been there 45 or 50 days and they've identified housing, we're going to make sure they're stable until they can get in that housing.
And what about the children and their education? How is that addressed while they're there?
Right. So for domestic violence victims, if somebody has, you know, fled their home, Their homeschool can come get them and pick them up. We can transfer them and help them transfer into the local school that might be nearby. But there are considerations that the schools need to make for those individuals living in shelters like that, so they can still have that sense of community that they knew at one time. So hopefully being able to remain in their school. But, you know, quite frankly, we take victims from all over the state of Pennsylvania, and sometimes that's just not possible. You know, Harrisburg is a hub for transportation. We get a lot of folks from out on the western end of Pennsylvania, so their kids aren't going to be able to stay in school out there. So we do, you know, make sure we connect them with the school resources and get them enrolled. We see parents homeschooling, so we have Wi-Fi and everything set up so they can do that, and workstations that they could use, computer lab, things like that at our facility.
So that sounds like that's part of your innovative programming. What are some of the other innovative programs you do?
Well, I think it may not be innovative, but it's important. And it's our prevention education programs. These are cornerstones. And what we do is go into the community and we talk about raising awareness of domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and all the things that go with it. But we also want to address the causes. You know, the attitudes and the cultural beliefs that surround supporting a culture of violence against women, you know, sexualizing our children for little beauty pageants or ads. I know I do a lot of training and teaching, and I have these pictures of little girls in a push-up bikini that one company sold at one time and got a lot of backlash for doing that. But, you know, there's no reason. It's purely sexualizing and objectifying our women, our girls, our boys. And it helps create a culture where we look at people as things instead of, yeah, of human beings. And then it becomes easier for perpetrators to abuse, to traffic.
That's a really important point about how community can do things differently to prevent some of the kinds of things that you see. What are some of the programs or ways that you help the children themselves heal in a way that would help to prevent this cycle, keep them from continuing this on as they grow up? Do you have anything that you do to address those things with the children themselves?
Right. So whether it's sort of an individual counseling session, and our counseling is, you know, we are not clinicians, we're not professional therapists. We're looking at validating the feelings, about helping them plan for the future, about helping them build healthy support networks. So think about maybe a 13-year-old who has started dating, and in this world, it's not uncommon,
right?
And is in a unhealthy relationship. So what we want to do is help her identify what a healthy relationship looks like versus what her relationship looks like, and let that, her or him, let them look at that and compare it and come to the realization themselves, right? They have to be able to see it and understand it.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of education. We do a lot of validating, you know, experiences, and helping them think of ways to build healthier support systems in their life, whether it's, you know, parents or teachers or coaches, but also their friendships and their dating relationships. Little kids, we might be doing something very different. It has to be age appropriate, of course.
Sure, sure. So changing the topic slightly is a question about pets. What kinds of things do people have to think about when they are afraid to leave a situation because they've got pets that are important to them?
Sure, and pets are a big part of the family. You know, they're as important as our children. And some, you know, folks feel like their pets are their children, so we want to be really cognizant of that. And if somebody is fleeing and won't leave without their pet, we do have area shelters and fostering that will take care of that pet until that person is able to establish their own place, if that's what they want, and then sort of reunite with that pet. If they have, you know, service animals, of course, they come right in, right with the client, and they will stay right in the building with that client.
do you get many of those situations?
We do get some, yes. Yeah. We will get people who say, I can't leave without my pet. And there's all kinds of pets. Believe me, we've seen a lot of things from, you know, turtles and snakes and dogs and cats, of course. And people, it's a real barrier if somebody wants to bring that pet. So having shelters that understand that is critical. And I think all of the centers like the Y across the counties all recognize these things and work with area shelters and fostering programs to make sure that that pet can be safely cared for so that the survivor can leave. And some will even take all the pets. It just depends on the program.
So what haven't I asked you about that you think is important?
The YWCA, if you're a victim of domestic violence, sexual assault, or human trafficking, you can call us 24/7 at 800-654-1211. It is a lifeline. It is a way for you to access our services when it is safe for you to do so. And you will know that somebody is always on that phone who is trained to help you deal with this situation.
So if folks are listening and they're across the country, what kind of resources did they need to think about if they're not here in central Pennsylvania?
So I think the thing to do is, you know, if you have your smartphone, if you have access to a computer, you know, go on and look for your state coalition. Here it's the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Go on their website. They will have a list of shelter programs in all the counties. Each state's going to have something similar, and you will find a program, and you will find that 800 number, usually a toll-free number, to call and reach out. So that would be my advice if, you know, again, ask somebody to help you if you need that. If you can't access your own smartphone, ask your neighbor for theirs.
When you think about folks who know someone who is afraid to leave because they don't have a place to go or they think they will become homeless, what advice could you give to a friend? What can they do to help the situation?
Right. Well, when we talk about a domestic violence, even a human trafficking type situation, we don't want to put somebody in danger, in harm's way.
Right.
You know, offering and being aware of what's going on, maybe setting up a signal with your neighbor who you know may be experiencing violence and just saying to her one day out on the sidewalk, you know, I've noticed something. And I just want to make sure you're safe. Are you safe at home? And she may or may not answer that question. But what you can also say is, you know, if you ever need anything and you're in danger, put your porch light on. You know, offer that phone, of course. And as a community, we need to know where to send somebody who needs that help. So know your local resources.
So on that note, I thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's been very informative. Thanks.
Thank you.
Randy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 2 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, clinicians, and more, to provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 2 will include a series of 7 podcasts that will include an overview and understanding the link between domestic violence and homelessness, the relationship between domestic violence and pet abuse, how to navigate domestic violence in an LGBTQ+ relationship, understanding teen violence, the challenges of survivors and resilience revolution from victim to victor, and exploring how cultural traditions impact domestic violence. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts who work in the field of domestic violence, criminal justice, and social work academia, and a survivor who was a victim of the domestic violence. This podcast will be broadcasted starting in July 24 and running through September of 2024. Go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org if you missed the podcast, if you'd like any of the resources that support the podcast, and to take a brief survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of our show.